Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimbo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with SkySports.com and NFL UK. It's Neil Reynolds and Jeff Reinbold here with all the talking points from week 15 in the NFL. And Jeff, there's plenty to talk about. One or two things to get stuck into, I think.
There's a lot of things to talk about that really we need to talk about. And we need to air out and really, you know, get between the image protection and the facts. And I think that's going to be fun.
All right. So, Giants fans, if you want to rejoin us about the 25-minute mark of this podcast, I think that's probably for the best, because we're going to discuss your star man, Odell Beckham Jr., and his antics. It wasn't just him, but it was largely him in the game between the Giants and the Carolina Panthers on Sunday night. He has been issued with a one-game ban. Jeff, we were both pretty furious about this. Actually, we'll start with this question here from, we got lots of questions about this. Tom Julian says, you guys were furious Sunday night. Has your view softened?
Hardened. Because now you start to see the fallout from the childish antics on the field of OBJ. The bottom line is, the guy had how many receptions, Neil?
Six or seven in the end for about 70 yards and a touchdown.
For 70 yards and a touchdown. If you take away the yardage that the Giants lost on his penalties, that's 60 yards of penalties. That means he had whatever, how many catches for 12 yards and a touchdown. And then on top of it, you lose him, your star player, you lose him for four quarters at a critical time. If Washington doesn't win, the Giants still have a chance to win a championship. And now you take yourself out of the – don't blame the commissioner. Don't blame the guys at the league office. Don't blame James Thrash. Don't blame Merton Hanks. Don't blame it. It's on you. It's on you as a player, and it's on you as an organization.
Six catches for 76 yards and a touchdown. And, Jeff, you could see how early in the game – Josh Norman came in very physical, and there was some intimidation there in terms of trying to rough up Odell Beckham. But Odell Beckham actually told me this, Jeff, that everyone tries to rough him up at the line of scrimmage. That's a defensive back's game against him, because if he gets down into open field, he's so quick. So Odell Beckham didn't see anything unusual, really, I don't think, from Josh Norman. It got into his head, and all of those penalties were in those, first three quarters. And pretty much all of his catches came in the latter part of the game when he settled down. So I talked once to Eric Wood, the center of the Buffalo Bills. He said there are penalties that you make where you are stressed as a player. You know, you might hold somebody because you're in bad position. There are penalties that might come mental errors. He said, but the worst ones are selfish penalties. Was Odell Beckham being selfish and letting a personal battle detract from what should have been a team effort?
Okay. We talk all the time to the players about controllable factors. What can you control? You can't control Josh Norman. You can't control how the Panthers warm up. You can't control the officiating. You can't. The only thing that you really have control over, unless you choose to lose it, which is what happened in the game, is how you deal with somebody that talks or taunts you or all those other things. When you make it about you, which is what it became, and it was really, really evident to me. And listen to me, I'm telling you, I've done this for 30 years. I've stood on a lot of sidelines and seen a lot of temper tantrums and a lot of behaviors. That was classic. It's all about me. I need to have the ball. I'm being abused. I. To the point when the text came out, and this is where you got to understand, right? You can be a fan, and you can be a Giants apologist or OBJ apologist or whatever. Here's the facts. When he went to when Coughlin had his receiver coach try and get him under control, what was his response? We're getting our butts kicked, and nobody cares but me. It's all about who. It's all about me. Blame everybody else. It's all about me.
Let's go through a little bit of the progression of the day, because Deion Sanders was on the Rich Eisen show yesterday and was talking about pregame intimidation from the Carolina Panthers. We've got a question in the mailbag from Andy T. who says, did the Panthers' pre-game intimidation tactics cause Odell Beckham to overstep the mark? Should both be punished? So the Panthers, Jay Glazer put on a video of Josh Norman holding a baseball bat. But then Dion has spoken to the Giants. The Giants have got video footage out there, which is a practice squad player holding a baseball bat. There were apparently, reportedly, threats that the Panthers were going to end Odell Beckham's career. He worked himself up into a frenzy. I mean, were we talking a Nancy Kerrigan situation? Were they going to do him in the pregame with the baseball bat?
What it is, what's going on right now is damage control, right? And this is classic
from the Giants.
Damage control.
And Odell's
exactly.
team, probably.
From everybody associated with the Giants and Odell Beckham's people and anybody that he has commercial arrangements with, they're all trying to mitigate the damage. How do you do that? Classic damage control. Blame everybody else. It's not. You immediately shotgun spray everybody and anything that you can blame to take the focus off of the actions. You can't allow this to happen. And I'm going to tell you, this is not just. I don't just take issue with what he did. I take issue with how the Giants handle it. You know, Neil, I'm a big Tom Coughlin fan. Mm-hmm. Tom Coughlin failed miserably on game day. Miserably.
Because even if you don't, I get the point. You know, I made this point on Sunday night in the studio that you should be benching Odell Beckham now. And I got quite a bit of, I think a lot of Giants fans didn't like that. And as you say, there were maybe some Odell Beckham apologists in there. People were saying, well, you know, he's trying to win a game. Take his star player out. Yeah, nice one, Neil. But, okay, at some point, there needs to be a line. And you say, well, this is what's acceptable. This is what's safe. I mean, because it got dangerous in the end. The flying headbutt to Josh Norman was not safe. This is what we want from our players. There was a distraction there. And you can't say you don't make any. It might not have even been a whole game. You could have benched him for a series. You could have benched him for a quarter. Bill Belichick benched Wes Welker for the opening quarter of a playoff game against the Jets because of comments that Welker made about Rex Ryan, which was stepping outside of what the Patriots expected of their players. And Belichick hurt his team that way, but he had his morals and his principles and he set a standard. You didn't have to bench Odell Beckham for the whole game, but you could have sent him a message.
Absolutely. Let's just examine another scenario. So, for example, you take Belichick because you brought him up. He had Randy Moss, mm-hmm. right, and he had Brandon Browner. Both guys been trouble everywhere they've been issue guys, been all about me guys. He had those guys and not a single incident when they're with the Patriots, because the line is very clear there. You don't cross. It doesn't matter if you're Tom Brady or if you're Brian Stork, the center. You don't cross a certain line. That's where it's. And again, I want you to. I want to make it perfectly clear. I think the blame in this is way past Tom Coughlin, way past the Giants. It goes to the officials who, at the time that the stuff started,
yep.
had the opportunity to get it under control. Real simple.
Mm-hmm.
Real simple. And they chose not to. And then as it got worse and worse, it got to the point where that headbutt that you talked about, that flying headbutt, that run, which was, that is unconscionable.
Mm.
Unconscionable in this game. He crossed so many lines when he did that. Now, let's. There's so much that we can talk about here, so much to examine. The baseball bat theory. That's like, you know, now we're getting into the Kennedy assassination. Will you please? What do you think? That the guy, some practice roster guy with a baseball bat is going to beat you in front of 65,000 people in Giants Stadium? It almost is offensive to your intelligence, some of the stuff that's coming out of New York. It is absolutely insane. And when I hear guys defend the actions, I just shake my head. I just don't get it.
And there were talk anti-gay slurs. There were slurs about Odell Beckham's hairstyle. This must have all been stuff that, I mean, that's sticks and stones may break my bones stuff, Jeff. I mean, that must be, you must hear that on the field time and time again. Players have to deal with that, right?
That's nonstop during the course of a game, right? Now, here's what's going to happen. Here's, I think, what'll come out of this. Is defensive backs around the league now see, and this is what happens in pro sports, in pro football. If you have a weakness, no matter what that weakness is, you can't run, you're not strong enough, you wilt under pressure, whatever your weakness is, people are going to try and exploit that weakness every chance they get. So if he thinks that he got taunted and he got verbally assaulted or all the other stuff I've heard, then he better get ready because it isn't going to go away. It's going to get worse now because you've shown that you're susceptible to it. That you, Josh Norman or Courtland Finnegan or whomever who lines up against you, just all he has to do is start to talk to you and he can get inside your head to the point where you can't play the game effectively.
And they'll look for that, Jeff, because if I'm a defensive back covering Odell Beckham, I know I've got to be physical at the line of scrimmage. And number two, I've got to try and get in his head and get him not concentrating on his game. If I lose either of those two, then he's going to beat me all over the field. That's the reality. He's too good to stop. So if you've suddenly got another way of stopping him, you're going to use it. You're going to use the mental side of the game.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's interesting. You can set yourself up for this, too. Because prior to our Sky broadcast, we get some what they call wild feed from the at the stadium before the
see
game.
See all the stuff on the field.
Yeah, and the guys warming up. Well, he has his routine where he goes down in the end zone and he catches balls one-handed. And now the Giants have made a spectacle of it because if you noticed on the film before the game, they rope off and people come down
that's
and they
where
stand.
They, all their sponsors, when they take all those guys down, their partners, they've made a thing of it.
They've made it a big deal. Well, you got to understand, when you do that, when you separate yourself to that point, the guys on the other side are watching that too. And that was, I listened to Josh Norman's comments, and some of Josh Norman's comments are absolutely inexcusable.
Agreed.
Also.
Agreed.
Right? There's a lot of people at fault in this deal.
Yeah.
But when the Giants put him out there like that, and he puts himself out there like that, you got to understand, there's a team full of alpha males that are ultra competitive down on the other side of the sideline, and they're going to say, hey, okay, we'll see.
Talk about Josh Norman in a second, but I just want to go back to Tom Coughlin for 1 minute because I think he insults my intelligence. He insults the intelligence of people who are fans of the NFL, people who cover the NFL. One of his quotes here was, I thought it was too bad today that in the world of sports and from everything I hear, that the discussion going on is about the personal battle that took place between Odell Beckham and Josh Norman, not about a team that is 14-0 and a game that was at one point 35-7 ended up being 35-0. It's too bad about what's being emphasized. Come on, coach. What did you expect us to talk about? Everyone is talking about it. You're telling us you want us to look away. And then he says as well, Jeff, and I don't buy this because coaches are always, they know when to throw their challenge flag. They're looking at the big jumbotron up on the big screen. He says he didn't see the flying headbutt.
Awesome.
Are you kidding me?
Awesome. Awesome. Awesome that you caught that. When he said, I didn't know what the penalties were for.
Ugh.
Come on, coach. And again, this kills me, absolutely kills me, as a Tom Coughlin guy.
Me too.
Right?
Yeah, and I'm a Beckham guy in terms of him as a player. I think he's fantastic. I really do. But we got to tell it like it is, Jeff.
I'm going to make the same mistake. It kills me to and it really disappoints me, frankly, to hear that kind of comment come from a guy who I have so much respect for. And to say that he didn't know what the penalties were for. And again, I thought it was really apropos too when he talked about I sent the receiver coach over there to calm him down.
That's a head coach.
That may be fine for one. When there's a second one and a third violation, now it's incumbent upon you as the head coach. It's your football team, coach. Your football team, manage it. And if that means you got to go over there yourself and settle him down or sit him down or whatever you have to do, that's your responsibility to your football team. I was, again, look at the facts, not the fluff, right? Look at what happened, not what they want you to see, okay? When all of this was going on, where were the leaders on the Giants to pull him aside and talk to him?
That showed you, that there's actually, maybe short of Eli, there are no natural leaders on that team. I saw on the sideline Thomas Davis talking to Josh Norman. Luke Kuechly was in Josh Norman's
Cam ear. Newton was in his ear.
There's your leadership.
The entire Carolina team, right?
Because Norman needed to calm down as well.
Yeah, because, again, let's not. We're not exempting Josh Norman because he was just as bad in so many ways.
Especially early on. Not so much afterwards. I think when he kneed Odell Beckham in the face, I think anyone would have done that after being on the receiving end of the flying headbutt. But Jeff, the two of them are two young players who've got a long playing career ahead of them.
Maybe. You can't. There's no guarantees in the National Football League.
But I would like to think that it's okay, and these two young players need to learn this. You can have a rivalry. It's okay if Josh Norman gets beaten by Odell Beckham one day. That doesn't, for us, necessarily make Josh Norman not the best corner in the NFL. There was a lot of vitriol between both of these guys. It was almost like they were afraid to lose to the other one, that it might damage whatever swag they've got going on or whatever vibe they want to put out there. And I think you can have, Peyton Manning and Tom Brady. Brady beats Manning, Manning beats Brady. It's a great rivalry. Back and forth they go. One winning over the other won't detract from their great careers by the end of it. These two almost seem to have a fear. Going in, it was loads of silly talk. Odell Beckham's a ballerina. You call yourself Batman. I'm wearing my Joker cleats to warm up. That was Odell Beckham put his Joker cleats on the week before in Miami. It's like I think there's a little bit of growing up needs to be done here as well.
Yeah, there is. And again, we in the media, right, and I have to paint myself with that brush right now.
Yeah.
We in the media share a certain responsibility to it too, because to get that great quote, what will you do? You'll take the player out there as far as you can get him to get that quote. Mm-hmm. And then once you get one, now it's out and it's like Pandora's box. You can't get it back in. And these guys, they're great football players. I mean, they are two of the best at their position in the National Football League. But the game suffers. The league suffers. If that's the road you choose to go down on a personal basis, that's your personal choice. Mm. What concerns me is all of the guys. We have a saying in our locker room: you stand on the shoulders of those who came before you.
Yeah.
So Jerry Rice, who they're making a comparison to with Odell Beckham Jr., the next Jerry Rice, you never, ever saw Jerry Rice that way. As highly competitive as Jerry Rice was, the greatest receiver of all time, never, never.
One last point then, Jeff. So does Odell Beckham, does he change? Does he learn from this? Because it sounds like we're both kind of saying he's been enabled a little bit by the New York Giants. I've had the opportunity to work with Odell, and he's a good guy. When you meet him, what impressed me was I asked him about spectacular catches, and he said actually what keeps him awake at night is plays that he hasn't made. He said he has this fierce desire to be the greatest of all time. But then, Jeff, he is a true superstar, and there are certain superstar elements that come with anyone who's a superstar. For example, we were doing an interview, and four or five times through the interview, halfway through the question, he'd start yawning. And that's because he's Odell Beckham, and I wasn't about to tell him off for doing that. Now, you're talking about he was complaining that it was only him that was trying. We've made a circus of his pregame act. Has it become too much? Is there a danger that he becomes out of control and becomes, a superstar? Does he learn from this? I mean, that's where we've got to wait and see.
All right, and I used this yesterday with somebody, and I think it's really, really true. And if you're around Nick Saban very much, one of the things you learn is his belief system, and this is shared amongst a lot of people, that if you see it, you're either coaching it or you're allowing it, right? And that goes from a technique on the field or lack of technique on the field or a behavior on the field. You're either endorsing the behavior or you're allowing the behavior. And what's so critical with these guys, because we say, okay, it comes with superstar status. Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck, J.J. Watt. Thomas Davis, Luke Kuechly.
Yeah.
I mean, how many do I have to go through that don't have those behaviors?
Right. Aaron Rodgers. Have you ever seen Aaron Rodgers out and about getting in? You know, Aaron Rodgers once told me that he spends his winter evenings in Green Bay playing his guitar and sitting indoors because there's nothing to do.
Well, you know? And again, it's a guy can be anybody he wants to be, right? But the bottom line is, you know, your behavior. And again, you got to go to the bottom line all the time. That kind of behavior hurts your football team. If you choose to be that guy, and that's who you want to be, that's who you do, because you're making that choice, right? You have a choice about your behaviors. All of us do as human beings. When you choose that behavior, whether you do it unconsciously or consciously, you've made that choice, then you have to live with the ramifications of that choice. Sad part is, this is a team game. T-E-A-M, team. Team first. If you put yourself first, which is what he did, this is what you get.
All right, good stuff, Jeff. Let's move on to some other news from around the NFL. Then this one saddens me, Jeff. Tyrann Mathieu out with a torn ACL. I mean, injuries haven't hit the Cardinals as hard as they did last year, but this one hurts. And this is I think he's an overachieving player. He's a playmaker. I think we like to watch the way he kind of flies to the football. Bruce Arians is a big favorite of Coach Arians. This is a blow for the Cardinals at the wrong time of year.
Yeah, it is, and it really hurts the secondary that is one of the best in the National Football League. Yeah. He and Pat Peterson, you know, really, really can play. And again, this kid has battled through some, you know, self-created problems. When he was at LSU, here's a guy that you talk about not team-first behaviors. Mm-hmm. He had a litany of them, and actually ended up getting kicked off the team and kicked out of school, and has really resurrected his life and his career. And that's why I'm a fan of Tyrann Mathieu. Not in addition to the way he plays, it's how he's grown up. And again, it's sad for the Cardinals and it's sad for the player, but it's a fact of life again in the National Football League.
I think I told this story to you before on the podcast. I was watching a program where they followed him in the build up to when he was being drafted. And they had the cameras there at his draft party, and his friends all had bottles on the table, and it was water and soft drinks. But he said, you know what, from a distance, that looks like beer. He said, clear these tables. He was already thinking about his, you know, I need to make a fresh start as I go into the NFL, and he's kind of done that.
Well, let's talk about him a little bit, and we'll go back. This is, again, it sounds like I'm, you know, just grinding on OBJ, but what I'm grinding on is the behavior, right? Not the man, the behavior. I want to see him become the kind of guy I think that he would rather be. And just like Tyrann Mathieu, here's a kid from, you know, St. Augs High School in New Orleans, a tough, tough part of New Orleans. I recruited the kid, so I know him. I watched him as a young kid, just a 17-year-old kid, go to LSU, have tremendous success at LSU. The Honey Badger finished, I think, second or third in the Heisman voting as a sophomore. And the whole thing just blew up on him. Couldn't handle the adulation, couldn't handle the fame, got popped for weed a couple times, got kicked out of school, kicked off the team. Really, a lot of people backed off of him. In addition, he's not a great, I mean, he's not a, like you said, Neil, he's an overachiever as an athlete. Mm. But he recognized that he had to change his behaviors. And Patrick Peterson, frankly, was a tremendous mentor for him through that process. And what you talked about at his draft party was an indication of a guy who figured it out. That, hey, I can't just keep down this road because it's not a productive place to be. And again, I'm happy for him that he's grown as a man, number one, and, you know, that he's turned out to be a Pro Bowl caliber player, and this will be a bump in the road. He'll be back in another year.
Jeff, here's a guy who did it the right way for 18 seasons in the NFL. Charles Woodson is going to hang them up after this year. We've seen him make plays time and time again this season. There's no doubt, I think, that Charles Woodson, if he came back for a 19th year, could get the job done in some way. But, you know, incredible career. Started with the Oakland Raiders, then goes to Green Bay, back with Oakland, and I think importantly, Jeff, was a cornerback, then was a safety, and at both places has been a ball hawk, and I guess has tremendous instincts.
Yeah, you know, if we look at him as a player, he's a rare guy, because a guy that could play both corner and safety. And we got a question in the mailbag, and I'll just jump to it. Was he the greatest safety of all time? That's a great question because he and Ed Reed, to me, redefined the position. Because both of those guys were guys who could do all of the things that you want a safety to do. They could drop into the box like Ronnie Lott and be a factor on the run. They could play too high safety like John Lynch. They could cover man-to-man like most corners could. And Woodson was an amazing blitzer. When he was, I remember when he was with the Packers, they had so much success putting him in the against the slot receiver and bringing him as a blitzer from the slot because he was so tough and so he had instincts as a blitzer. He could. There was nothing on the football field that he couldn't do. And he and Ed Reed, to me, were really probably the two best that ever played.
Just from an X's and O's point of view, I want to pick you up on that. You said his instincts as a blitzer. Sometimes we think of a blitz as just, well, there's an you're bringing an extra guy and here he comes running up the middle. Is there a lot of timing and nuances to a blitz and pulling it off correctly?
Well, yeah, you talk about a blitz where a guy just comes free. That's the easy one. But the bottom line is you've got to be able to understand how the blitz is disguised so the quarterback can't see it. Because you're talking about guys that are spending 8 and 10 hours in the film room every day trying to get pre-snap clues as to what you're doing on defense. So it's understanding how to hide the blitz early, how to time the blitz so that you're at your what we call departure point at just the right time, where your entry angle into the blitz.
You have to let some things develop sometimes?
Sometimes you may be in what we call a trailer blitz, Neil, where you're blitzing behind another player. Well, if you're too close to him, one back can block two guys. So it's all very, very, very sophisticated. When you get into high-level blitzing like there is in the National Football League, so just being able to run fast and get to the quarterback as quickly there's a lot of difference to it. And then once you get there, if you're not free, how do you rush on a back? Both he and Ed Reed could beat a back one-on-one in pass rush.
Charles Woodson was a great player. He might be an even better interview. I interviewed him a couple of years ago out in Oakland and was supposed to have 5 minutes, and we were about 15 minutes in. I'd done every question in my notebook, and he was like, well, we're on lunch, I'm good to keep going. And I was just like, I started throwing out all sorts. I was like, so tell me about prevent defense. Does it prevent you from winning? He was like, yeah, there's some truth. We went everywhere. He was a great ambassador, and I tell you what, he could do TV if he wanted to.
Let me ask you a question. Did he yawn when you were asking him questions?
Not once. He looked everything in the eye. You know, everything was like wide awake.
That's the way he played the game.
Yeah, it was. Marcus Mariota is done for the year, MCL injury. So let's put his rookie season up there and assess it. Jeff, did you see a lot of good stuff?
I thought there were a lot of good things in him. You saw the athleticism that we talked about in the draft. He has a touchdown run of over 40 yards, a touchdown reception of over 40 yards, and a touchdown pass of over 40 yards. I don't know if that's ever happened in the National Football League before. You can see his anticipation. You can see his decision-making. He looked like a rookie sometimes. Now, you got to understand, this is a guy behind a very average offensive line and very limited, with the exception of Delanie Walker, not much to throw to. So I think if you're the Titans, this is a smart move. Put him on the shelf. Call it a rookie season.
Yeah.
Get him into the offseason program. He needs to get bigger and stronger. That's one part of his game I know he needs to work at. And come back in this second year. Try and load up in free agency, draft well, and give him some weapons. And I think you've got a quarterback for the next 10 years.
Jeff, this is a little bit out of left field, but I wanted to share it today. So we had the Pittsburgh-Denver game on Sunday night. Pittsburgh come from behind. They win 34-27. And I was reading a quote from Gary Kubiak, who says that Peyton Manning's going to dress on Monday Night Football against Cincinnati Bengals, even if he's not 100%. But nothing has changed at quarterback. So they're staying with Brock Osweiler. So this is the left field bit. I'm writing an article this month. It's actually for the Super Bowl edition for Gridiron Magazine. And my article is featuring interviews I did with John Elway, Jim Kelly, and Dan Marino. Mm-hmm. So it's that class of 83 and how they fared in the Super Bowl. So I'm digging through some old interviews that I've done, and I find an interview with John Elway that I did in 2010. He'd only just joined the Denver Broncos upper management. But this, I think, is interesting now. When you think about everything that he has going on with Peyton Manning and how they've asked Peyton to take a pay cut. And I think that the Broncos might have wanted Peyton to, you know, go into retirement. Here's a quote from John Elway, who says, "I just knew that my body was breaking down." This is after he won the second Super Bowl. "I could have played a couple more years, but I didn't want to come back from winning two Super Bowls and be an also-ran." So in his own... So there's a conflict there, because it's in his own head.
Yeah.
Elway knew he didn't want to be that guy, and he's got that guy on his roster now.
Yeah, and, you know, we're not privy to the question, or for, to the discussions that went on in Denver in the offseason, but, you know, I agree with you, Neil. I would not be surprised in the slightest if they, if he had not counseled Peyton to, hey, it's time to move on. And, you know, this is really the difficult, one of the most difficult things you do in this business is
move on.
Moving on. And, you know, again, there are a lot of things that Bill Belichick does extremely well. And one of the ones he does maybe better than anything is know when it's time to move on from veteran players that are on the, you know, you evaluate a player. And this is really interesting for, I think, for the listeners to understand. When I was in Kansas City, when we evaluated players, you evaluated players in were they an ascending player, a plateaued player, or a descending player? And you wanted as many ascending, plateaued players as you could have, and then you could keep around descending players if they had, you know, enough value.
Yeah.
But you didn't want to get into a scenario where your roster was full of descending players. And, you know, the Patriots, and they have the reputation of being ruthless and heartless, because you go through the number of guys that they, Ty Law and Willie McGinnis, and, you know, again, on and on and on and on and on, guys that they've let go at, you know, Vince Wilfork.
Yeah.
I mean, but they know when it's time to say when, and they're not afraid, because I think this is a great thing that we talk about team. Well, you have a responsibility to your football team as a general manager, personnel guy, head coach, to move those guys, because that's what's best for your team.
Just thought it was interesting digging into an old notebook from years ago, and it actually relates to now as well. What about anything else in Week 15 before we move on and make our picks for Week 16?
Well, you know what? We talked about this, and I just keep going back to it because they just fascinate me, is those Washington Redskins.
Yeah. You know, clinch the division this weekend.
They have Dallas and Philadelphia. You got Philadelphia this week, Dallas to close it out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dallas is probably going to be going through the motions in that last one. If they can beat Philly, they can win that division.
Well, they win it with a win over Philadelphia this weekend. Even if they don't, they've got another shot against Dallas. I mean,
that's what I'm saying. You're right there in the driver's seat. Now, what's even more fascinating now is, you know, Neil, you played the game. And I don't care whether you played the game in junior high school or you played it in the National Football League. It's that time when you get right to the cusp and all you're there now, right? Can you finalize it? Can you finish it? Can you get it done? Can you beat Philly? All right, if you lose to Philly, is the pressure of playing Dallas for the championship going to be too much for you? So this is another opportunity to find out about your football team. And I think Jay Gruden has done a phenomenal job of implementing what he wants. And again, it was a struggle in Washington.
Wow. Because power struggle.
He had to battle all the way up to the corner office, you know, the Dan Snyder's office, and set down a guy that they had given up a bunch of draft picks for,
and they wanted him
to be the face of the franchise, and actually tried to make him the face of the franchise, and Jay fought it, and he, you know, again, I won't say he won, because you never win totally.
But there's some courage of his convictions there, because he's had to say, I'm going with Kirk Cousins.
Exactly.
And if Kirk fails, then Jay's out the door.
But see, that to me coaching. That's what you, if you're gonna sit in that chair, you gotta understand the buck stops with you, and if you're gonna do it the way you believe it needs to be done.
All right, let's move on and make our picks for week 16 in the NFL then. And we got a bunch of games on Sky Sports. Christmas Eve, Boxing Day. We'll have three on December the 27th. Then we got Monday Night Football as well. So all your NFL action is covered over the holiday period on Sky Sports. Let's start on Christmas Eve then. San Diego at Oakland.
You know what? I'm going to take the Raiders, but I was really pleased to see San Diego win that last game in the stadium and how emotional that all was.
Yep, I'm going to go Oakland as well. Last ever touchdown in San Diego scored by the mighty Miami Dolphins. Ryan Tannehill, get in. That's how those Dolphins, it's got to get some sort of history. Washington at Philadelphia then. So this is, as you say, it's for all the marbles. Washington, who haven't been as good on the road this year, but they haven't got to travel too far to play Philadelphia.
Just bus ride up the, up the interstate.
I think they get it done. I think the stakes are right there.
I agree. I think this is, I think, you know, they have it all to play for now. This is a chance for you to show.
Going Washington?
Yep.
All right. Let's move on to Sunday then. Carolina at Atlanta. I'm going to say Carolina, but I just want to see them protect those players. I'd hate to see this season. What has been a tremendous season. Cam got banged up a bit more again on Sunday. I mean, how outstanding was Cam Newton? Just cool as you like.
Tremendous.
Oh, you tied the game up at 35? Okay, well, it's my turn. You left me a bit of time on the clock.
You know, and isn't that amazing? We spend all this time talking about a guy that you know, netted 12 yards for his offense and one touchdown. And the other guy on the other side of the field was responsible for I don't know how much yardage and five touchdowns. So it just goes to show you how screwed up we are. But
yeah, there you go. Tom Coughlin was right. We should have been focusing on Cam.
Exactly. I think that Carolina's going to win, but I think this is going to be a little tougher game than you thought. And there's already started to be chirping out of Atlanta's camp about Josh Norman.
Well, they're all going to go after Josh Norman the same way as he goes after other people. Dallas at Buffalo.
It's in Buffalo.
It's in Buffalo.
I'm going to take Buffalo.
Well, we're both going Buffalo in that one. San Francisco at Detroit. Detroit got a nice win on Monday Night Football. I think New Orleans is again disappointing, but I would probably say Detroit win this one at home.
You know what? I didn't watch the game, but I watched the highlights of that game, and I thought Detroit did some really, really nice things. They've got some players.
They have, and they could have beaten Green Bay a few weeks ago. They've had a strong second half of the season.
Did you see, I think it was Abdullah out in space with the linebacker?
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Oh, my gosh. You wait till you see this cut he makes. Yeah. It's an ankle breaker, and I mean, it is amazing. I'm going to take Detroit.
Yeah, he's Amir Abdullah is an exciting young back. Early on, he had a few fumbles, but I think if he clears all that stuff up. Cleveland at Kansas City, so I'm going to pick the Chiefs. Again, Jeff, Chiefs last week, it was Alex Smith was what, 21 of 25? Not flashy, no interceptions. They got a couple of big running plays, and they got some splash plays on defense. Rinse and repeat that for the past 8 weeks, and that's been the Chiefs.
That's been their MO. That's been the thing that, you know, allows them to win football games. They play real solid special teams. They try to, you know, Baltimore tried a crazy fake and in a place where you would never anticipate somebody's going to fake. They had it covered. They handled it and then gave them a short field and blew the game open. So they're opportunistic on special teams. They play great defense, making some plays in the secondary to score. And offensively, they're efficient. So that's a pretty good recipe.
Chiefs?
Yep.
All right, both going Kansas City in that one. Indianapolis at Miami. To me, looked like the Dolphins have given up last week when they played out west in San Diego, but Indianapolis, very disappointing loss at home. Matt Hasselbeck is, according to Chuck Pagano, beat up from his feet upwards, and there's no Andrew Luck again this week. And we said at the time, we thought this whole Andrew Luck, this came out 2 to 6 weeks originally, they said, didn't they? I mean, I think we all felt right from the start that if you've got
lacerated body parts,
then, you know, I mean, if they're still alive in week 17, perhaps you bring him back. But I think he's done for the year. And I think I'll probably go Miami because this is in Miami.
Well, I think this will be a game. If he could come back in the final week, it'll be dependent upon whether they win this game or not. If Miami wins, there's absolutely 0 point putting him back behind that offensive line and letting him get hit again. So I'm going to take Miami, too, because I just think that right now that you talk about, you know, playing out the string or cashing it in, I think that – you know, look at the Colts, and that's a team that I think has done that.
Yeah, they're playing for a division. They shouldn't be.
That's a team that should be playing for a title and an opportunity to be in the playoffs.
Jacksonville at New Orleans. It's a tough one, this one.
Yeah, you know what? Again, I think Breeze is hurt. Mm-hmm. And so if Breeze doesn't play, certainly I'm going to take Jacksonville. And again, I don't know his status right now, but I'm going to go on a limb and take Jacksonville.
All right, I think because of Jacksonville's offensive weaponry, Allen Robinson, Allen Hurns, Bortles, I'm going to do the same, and I'm going to take Jacksonville there. But again, it'll be tougher for them to do that if Breeze is is playing. So our first game on Sky Sports on Sunday night is New England at the New York Jets. And this is a big game for both teams. So you think, well, how? New England have already clinched a first round bye. But they're a different team at home and they'll want home field advantage. If they win this game, New England get home field advantage through the AFC playoffs. The Jets, on the other hand, they need this win to stay in that playoff race. If the Jets lose and Pittsburgh win, Pittsburgh we're in. And you know, Kansas City will be in with a win as well. It'll be all sewn up, you know, in terms of the Jets can be knocked out of the playoffs this weekend if they lose and those other two win.
There's a lot of factors that make this an attractive game. And you know, we talk about the Jets are battling for their playoff lives. And New England really understands how much better they are and how tough they are to beat at home, particularly if they have home field advantage through the whole playoffs. You'd have to say that's going to be the favorite, you know. But I think the Jets are better. I just don't know if the Jets are good enough to go up to New England and win in New England. If they are, then, you know, I saw Todd Bowles said, we're just going to do the best we can and let the playoff, you know, let the football guys decide whether we're worthy or not. If they go up there, they're worthy.
No, this is in New York, Jeff. This one's in New York. So does it change anything?
Yeah, I think so because, you know, number one, New England's so good up there. And number two, I think the Jets and in front of their fans and home, you know, anytime you play in the National Football League, you know, we used to talk about this. It said, any home game, you immediately become a three-point favorite.
3 points, right, yeah.
So I think the Jets will get it at home. I'm going to go Jets.
All right, I'm going to go New England. I still think they've got too much for the New York Jets, although the Jets have been one of the feel-good stories of this season. The Chicago Bears at Tampa Bay both came off disappointing loss. Well, the Bears just didn't show up in Minnesota.
No, you know, it's interesting.
I'm going to go Tampa Bay just because I think they're fighting for something for Lovie
Smith.
Yeah,
you know, it's interesting with the Bears, Neil. You know, we talked to
they had it going on earlier.
Yeah, the last 3 weeks, we said, you know, there's a team that's trending in the right direction. Mm-hmm. They had won a couple games, you know, fought their tail off to get into games. And, you know, I thought Foxy had kind of turned the corner a little bit. And then, boy, they played really poorly the last couple weeks. So I'm going to take Tampa Bay.
All right, both going Tampa Bay in that one. Houston at Tennessee. So Houston need this one. They can win the division. I've got the playoff scenarios in front of me. I'm not quite sure what this means. It says Houston clinches the AFC South. If Houston wins and Houston clinches strength of victory tiebreaker over Indianapolis, I have no idea about strength of victory tiebreakers. But they need it anyway. They need to win this one. Zach Mettenberger's at quarterback for Tennessee. I think Houston probably get the job done here, even though the game is in Tennessee.
Yeah, you know what? This is where the veteran leadership of guys like Vince Wilfork can come out, because I saw his quote and I thought it was really, really smart. Hey, we're going to celebrate winning in Indianapolis for the first time in franchise history for about 15 minutes. Now it's, you know, on to the next one, which is Tennessee. I think that's the focus that they need to have, and I'm going to take Houston.
It's going to be low scoring, I think, when you've got Brandon Weeden and Zach Mettenberger at quarterback for the respective teams. Our second game on Sunday is Green Bay at Arizona. So even in a win over the Raiders, Packers didn't look tremendous, did they? And now they're going to Arizona. I'm probably going to take the Cardinals at home.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Cardinals at home. And I'm really anxious to watch this game because I want to see what the Cardinals are going to do with those Packer receivers who have struggled so much against press man coverage. They like to play a lot of man coverage, a lot of press man. So it'll be interesting to see how that goes. I'm taking Arizona.
All right, let's go with St. Louis at Seattle. Who we like in that one is Seattle, probably at home. They got 1-5 straight now. So
yeah, I think that's the team that you got to look out for right now. If you're talking about an NFC team that is, you know, really playing well, they are playing extremely well, and their quarterback may be playing as good as any quarterback in the league right now.
One of the early games I should have mentioned, actually, because it's been flexed out, Pittsburgh at Baltimore. So Pittsburgh, we've seen them red hot on offense in recent weeks. Antonio Brown, another 16-catch game. If they win, and as we said, if the Jets lose, Pittsburgh are in the playoffs. I'm going to take Pittsburgh to win on the road. And they're looking, they would be a tough out in the playoffs, Jeff.
You know what? And let's again, because this gives us an opportunity to talk about how you handle things and handle things well. Harris, the corner from Denver, who really had
Chris Harris
had to cover Brown the entire day.
Yep.
His response after the game, it was best on best, and he won.
Yeah.
That's what
You can be a competitor and admit the fact. Right. You got, and it's
Chris
true.
Harris got beat for a touchdown, but I would still say Chris Harris is one of the best corners in
without
the NFL. That's what I'm talking about.
Without a shadow of a doubt.
Yeah.
Right? Without
it's
a shadow
okay
of a doubt.
It's okay to lose every now and then.
It's going to happen. It's pro football. Mm. Those guys are getting paid on the other side, too. And you know what? Compete your heart out. Compete your butt off.
Mm.
And at the end of the day, that's what you did. And you, as a man, you can walk away from it knowing that you gave your best
effort. And we as fans can celebrate a great rivalry.
Absolutely.
That's what you want. You want to see Josh Norman against Odell Beckham. You want to see Antonio Brown against Chris Harris.
And there was two guys who are at the top of their positions, right? Antonio Brown, Chris Harris Jr., two of the best at their position in the National Football League, competed like there was no tomorrow, right? Without all the antics, without all the nonsense, without all the extraneous stuff. That's what football should be.
Antonio Brown is another guy that you have to try and control at the line of scrimmage. And he's very difficult to control if you don't. But he doesn't get into the fights like Odell Beckham does. Because Beckham isn't just this season. It was last year against the Rams. It was, you know. So there's something else there. It's not just we're deciding that we have to get aggressive with him. And, you know, Antonio Brown's not getting into trouble, Jeff.
Well, again, he handles it a different way. He just plays, right? And if you just play, you don't get all that stuff. But when you start to retaliate and you start to talk back, because they know what? That once you speak back to them, you have them, right? And that's the way, you know, when I talk to a player who has these issues, the way I try to approach it with the guy is, do you want that guy to own you? Do you want him to control you? Do you want to become his? Mm. Because when you do that, you're now his. He's got you.
Right.
He's controlling you.
I'm going Pittsburgh. You going Pittsburgh?
I'm going to take Pittsburgh.
All right. Sunday night football then is the New York Giants at the Minnesota Vikings. So Minnesota need to have this to keep their momentum going. Giants looks like, I mean, there will be an appeal, I'm sure, but they will be without Odell Beckham. Could be out of the playoffs by the time this game is played. I probably like Minnesota at home. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I like Minnesota. I'm a little concerned about AP and where his health is and that power running game. But I think Matt Asiata can you know fill in for him.
Yeah, they got McKinnon as well. Jerick McKinnon can step in.
You know, so I think that Teddy Bridgewater took a stride last week, and I think that this team is focused and tough mentally, and again, a reflection of Mike Zimmer, and I'm going to take Minnesota.
All right, last game, Monday Night Football. Oh, what a good one. Cincinnati at Denver.
You know,
Cincinnati get the first round bye if they get this win, and Denver, all of a sudden, could find themselves being caught up in the division by Kansas City.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is really a big, big game for Denver. Mm. I mean, they've got to get out of this tailspin. And they got to play better in the second half because you've seen two second-half collapses in the last 2 weeks. So that's got to be an emphasis point for Kubiak. Let's talk a little bit about that second-half collapse. You know, they had so much success just throwing the ball at will against the Steelers in the first half. The Steelers made some good adjustments defensively, started to snug up the coverage a little bit, played a little bit more man, which they're not real good at, but they did it.
Yep.
And brought pressure against Osweiler. Interestingly enough, there was no running game per se from Denver. And the things that, you know, Kubiak's system,
you weren't impressed with Ronnie Hillman, were you?
No,
were watching
just thought,
in the
I
studio
thought he ran soft with his pads high and, you know, didn't really hit it.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, what I didn't see was the Kubiak system run the zone, run the naked off the zone, run the bootlegs, those move the pocket around. I think they got caught up in so much success they had in the first half, and then they tried to stay with that in the second half. It was too much for the quarterback.
This is a tough game for me to call because I want to say Denver because they're at home and they've had tremendous home field advantage. But I actually think even with backup quarterback A.J. McCarron at the helm, Cincinnati's just a better team at the moment. I don't know. It's tough to call.
You know, tell me because I'm not sure about this. You understand this whole lot better than me, Neil. But I don't think Cincinnati's out of the woods in terms of the play. Pittsburgh's breathing right down their neck.
Yeah, no, they can still lose their division. So
they need this game too. Mm. And you know, they did a good job last week of kind of limiting what McCarron was asked to do. Mm. This is a whole different defense this week. So I'm going to take Denver.
I'm going to take the Bengals on the road. There you go, I've done it. Cincinnati. All right, one question out of the mailbag, and then we'll wrap up this week's edition of Inside the Huddle. And Jeff, it comes from Danny King, who says, is Doug Baldwin squashing the myth that the Seahawks don't have a real number one wide receiver? We'll see, 10 touchdowns in four games.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're some guys get anointed the number one receiver. He's a number one. Mm. Well, and I use that terminology too, but the reality of it is, your play determines whether you're a one, a two, or a three. And for Seattle, who, quote, doesn't have a true number one, they just don't have a number one by reputation. But Doug Baldwin is starting to, you know, build a case for himself. And you know, you look at the production. He's the number one guy right now in Seattle, so that's, I guess, as much a number one as you need to be.
Absolutely, certainly in production. All right, good stuff, Jeff. We are out of time on this week's Inside the Huddle. Just time to wish everyone a Merry Christmas. What are you up to? I'm going to be home with the family. I'll be up to my neck in board games and can probably get my backside kicked at Madden.
Georgie will be after you.
Yeah, he's like, because I can't work all the buttons. There's too many buttons to press. You drop back to pass and there's like six buttons. And he laughs at me because I just press it straight away. And he's like, Dad, you know you called a halfback screen? You need to let the blocking develop. I was like, I know the game. I just can't work the buttons. So it's not that I don't know the game. I know what you're supposed to do on a screen, but I can't. There's just too many of them. Yeah, so that's going to be my Christmas. What about you, Jeff?
Technologically challenged. I am going to be in the water in the Canary Islands. I'm going to go on a little surf vacation for 3 days and get wet. And you know what? I'm not going to say aloha today. I'm going to give all of our listeners a Hawaiian Merry Christmas. So it's Mele Kaliki Maka.
Excellent. I can't argue with that. And I would just add my Merry Christmas to you all. Thanks for listening. This has been Inside the Huddle in association with Sky Sports and NFL UK. We will be back with a special edition next week. But in terms of breaking down all the games and everything, that will be in the new year. But until then, Merry Christmas.